Let's pray. God, we are so utterly dependent on you as a father teaching your kids. And we're dependent on your Spirit to stir our hearts, cause us to break out of our boxes and be willing to hear something which might be troubling or life-changing or disrupt our course that we've set. So God, I ask you to do that. I ask you to cause us to be steered in a way that will be in line with you. I thank you for your word. I thank you that it's enduring. I thank you that it's eternal. I thank you that your truth is something that doesn't change. I thank you that you are the same back when you inspired Moses and took him on the mountain, and your finger at one point wrote on the tablets. And I thank you for that. You haven't changed. You're the same God that has the same heart, the same love of a father towards us and wanting to guard and protect your children and lead them in ways which will bring prosperity in their lives. So I thank you for having that ability to look at those words that happened thousands of years ago that are still absolute and real. So I thank you for this opportunity to spend with my brothers and sisters and friends. And God, please cause us to give glory and honor to you as a people with our hearts. That's what matters, with our actions also and our words, but with our hearts as we sit here and we want to be soft and contrite before you and hear your voice. So not mine, but yours. Jesus, I thank you for that privilege that we can be the sons and daughters of the Most High God because of you. Amen. So we're on number 10 of the Big Ten. So I haven't done, you know, the pop quiz yet, you know, like, let's hear it, you know, let's hear the order. I intend to. You know, no cramming for a thing, you know. No cramming for the test and getting by. What? Yeah. Open book? Yeah. What are the 10? So, we're at the 10th commandment. Exodus chapter 20, verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servants, or his female servants, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. So, as we've kind of looked at over the last weeks with the Ten Commandments, it's pretty, our propensity is to find ways to validate and substantiate our righteousness by keeping rules and on the outside and getting the praise of people for doing it. And getting our merit as being a godly or righteous person. You know, this commandment, the Ten Commandment, is like we could all, if we were all sitting here in a fit of rage of coveting, would anybody know it? You know? You know, this is a, you know, if we were sitting here in a fitting rage of murder, right? We'd probably know it, right? We'd probably see it. If we were stealing things, if we were, you know, outwardly committing adultery. As all these things are, their attitudes of the heart, and that's what God cares about. But with coveting, it certainly is a state and condition of the heart. And it's a big one. It's a big one. And it's the root of a whole lot of other issues. And it's really important to look at it and correct it. It's not a minor perspective thing. It's one of the big 10. Don't lose sight of that, okay? And in a culture and in a society where, in a consumer-oriented society, the way that a consumer-oriented society, you know, prospers is when we are convinced that we need more things and we need to buy new things and new clothes and a new car and another house and a this and a that and a whatever. And so we're relentlessly bombarded. Any of you guys ever notice, by the way, on your phones, you know, what happens? You're not doing it. I mean, there's a relentless bombardment of ads, right? And if you even dare go look for something, game on, right? I mean, you're going to get it. And it's an amazing thing. I mean, the most valuable thing that I've heard, I don't know exactly how to state it, but the most valuable commodity that Amazon owns is your information. You know, that's where they make their money. That is the most valuable thing they own. Because with that, they sell the advertising to get you to buy things. You don't. And it's driven. It's unbelievably driven. I mean, it's on, you know, it used to be that somebody had a degree in marketing and advertising and they figured out how to go to the grocery store and finger paint on the windows or something, you know. I mean, it's, these days it has moved to a level that's pretty unbelievable with marketing. And so what does that do? That evokes and creates and stimulates covetousness in it, right? What is covetousness? That's a really important thing because we tend to think of covetousness as having to do with things, you know, cars and razors and, you know, motorcycles and guns and all the important things of life, you know.
It's only wanting desire, unnecessary desire for things that you don't need. And it's a precursor to knowledge, but like cutting is like stealing. It's great to do that. And if you want, if you just think one thing, and it's like extraction, or it's walking with God's heart. It's everything, you're standing in the doorway, you start cutting.
Because it is the root, it is the beginning of a lot of, if we would deal with the root of coveting in our life, we would deal with a whole lot of things. If we would deal with a covetous heart, and the opposite of a covetous heart, and keep this in mind, is contentment, right? It's being content with what you have, being content in the state you have. And if we're not content in the state we have, we should be such. That doesn't mean that in the midst of the, you know, if you peed your pants literally or figuratively, you shouldn't be content sitting there. Okay, so if we've made a mess of our lives, yeah, deal with it. But being content with what God has given us, I have a couple definitions just to think about to try to give us a perspective of it. It's ungodly and it's discontented desire. It's when you want what, it's when you don't want what God wants for you. And when God says, this is what I want for you, and you say, yeah, but this is what I want for me. And it goes a whole lot deeper as an internal sin. You're right. If without covetousness in our heart, we wouldn't steal probably. What is the root where it goes there, you know? I mean, you look at the Ten Commandments, period. You look at the first one, right? I am Yahweh. I am who I am. I'm the God that brought you out of Abraham. You know, you'll have no other gods before me, right? God is ultimate authority. God is who he is. God claims to be the absolute authority in life. So, what happens when we begin to covet that authority? Because that's what we do. Something that is God's, something that is not ours. We do not have absolute authority in our lives, but any of you exercised authority in your own life? Any of you decided I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do? Right? I don't care really what you say, God, but at this moment in time, I'm going to be authority. I'm going to take authority. I'm going to be the authority and determine what I do with my life. I would contend that's a relentless problem. Okay? And it's desiring something that is not ours. Is that coveting? Yeah, that's coveting. It causes us to dishonor God and to come against God. You look at the second commandment. You know, you shall have no other gods before me. Okay? Again, we are pretty quick to say, well, I don't have any Buddhas in my house. I'm good, right? We're good. I don't have idols in my house. But anything that we give glory to, and all glory is due who? God. Right? All glory is due to God. If we desire the glory that God deserves, we want to be recognized, we want to be seen, we want to be acknowledged, we want to be known, we want to be praised, that's coveting God's glory. That's coveting God's glory. And so coveting goes, it's an internal state of a heart that influences everything in our lives. Now obviously, you know, if I start coveting somebody else's stuff, that quite well might lead to stealing, right? You know, if I covet someone else's wife, what's that going to lead to? Adultery, you know, whether in my mind or literally in doing it. You know, if we dealt with so it's discontentment with what God has given us. And it's a very, I really want us all to consider that, because all of us, it's pretty easy to be discontent with what we have and not be grateful for what we have. And I would contend that it's, you know, in our culture, everything about our culture is trying to get us to be discontent, right? With the clothes you wear, you know, with the car you drive, with the house you have, right? With the amount of money you have. You know, we tend to think it related very much to money, and in our culture, it's very much related to money, you know. I was reading some stuff and was talking about, you know, people who are good with money don't do certain things, you know. They don't buy certain things, and they don't, you know, run up high interest rate credit cards and doing stuff. But what good does it do if you have a love for money and your security is in money? You know, just because you're good with money, what does that mean? You know, that's not necessarily a good thing. I'm not saying it's good to not be good with your money. But the one thing that is very important that we need to keep in mind is contentment is not nurtured by poverty or riches. You know, it's not a matter of riches. If God blesses you with riches, and I would go so far as to make a statement that most blessing of money and prosperity in this country is not from God, but from the enemy. God doesn't spoil his children in a way that draws them away from him, in a way that causes them to not be dependent and cry out to him. But the enemy does. The enemy prospers a lot of people, often in the name of God in this culture. Because most people, it's difficult. Is money evil? Money isn't evil. But money is the root of all kinds of evil in the process of having a wrong perspective. If God blesses us with money, what's he want to do? What's the purpose in doing that? To bless others. To bless others. If God gives us money, it's not for our selfish hedonism. If God gives us money, it's to bless others. That's why God uses us as an instrument of blessing in other people's lives. That's why he prospers. If that's not what our money's doing, we should be very suspect. Right? I mean, one of the most, there's some really wretched grandparent stickers. I really notice them now that I'm a grandparent, you know? You know, the concept that, you know, we are out spending our grandkids' inheritance, you know, doing it, a bumper sticker on the back of the motorhome, you know, whatever. What a terrible thing. That I'm selfish, that it's about me and it's about mine. I mean, I have a friend of mine that I worked on the road with for quite a while back in the old days. Still remained really good friends. Doesn't know God. He's worked his whole life hard. And now he's doing really well financially. He goes, you know, David, we're talking. He goes, man. He goes, you know, you always think when you retire, you're going to have all this. You're going to do all these things, you know. You used to love to hunt, you know, and you used to come up and go hunting with me sometimes and stuff. And he's a few years older than me. I'm young, but he's old. And so he has a hard time getting around, he goes, man, I thought, man, when I retire, I'm going to go do all these things I wanted to do. He goes, but now I can't do them. What am I doing? But there's a tragic thing in our culture. I mean, covetousness is what causes us to work hard and sacrifice all these things for retirement. So I can selfishly go do what I want to do in retirement. I mean, what is that? You know, besides futility, besides tragic. Poverty also is not a means to righteousness or lack of covetousness, okay? It doesn't necessarily foster it. I mean, those often, you know, that are very wealthy think, well, if I just need to put all my stuff away or sell all my things and go wander around the mountains of India or something, you know, and then I will be content and then I will be without coveting. The things aren't what produces covetousness. It's an attitude of the heart. Okay? And all of us struggle with it. Okay? And it is a root of all kinds of, you know, when you look at it, you go, well, I'm good, man. I haven't coveted my neighbor's ox in a long time. You know? I'm good, right? God's happy with me, you know, on doing it. But, you know, our whole culture is centered, our whole dating system, our whole means of getting married is based in covetousness, right? If I have this longing and desire and insatiable for some woman who is not my wife, that's a coveting problem, right? It is covetous to think that, so if God is not, if this woman is not the wife in your life, which she either is your wife or isn't your wife, there's kind of a pretty direct deal there, okay? If this woman is not the wife in your life, that means she's not your wife, that means she's someone else's wife. For you to want her, for you to long for her, for you to covet her, is wickedness and leads to destruction. The coveting is what's the baseline of your heart. I'm wanting something that isn't my own, right? I mean, you look at modern day dating and the way it is. You know, you let your heart go. What do? I start coveting and longing, pining, whatever romantic, nice words you might give for it, right? Towards some girl. I'm doing that. Is she your wife? Has God given her to you as your wife? Okay. If God has not given her to your wife, you have no right to covet her. And you know what? That's an internal thing. That's so romantic and I'm just in love and, you know, we can write it off and try to, but you know what the outward result of that is? The outward result will be bad. We don't have a right to covet. And we teach our kids to do that. It's okay, you know, to fall in love and to have girlfriends and give your heart away and, but covetousness is something that creates a lot of, is the baseline, is the foothold for a lot of sins. I think that's why God, in a sense, left it as the 10th commandment. You know, it's not necessarily an outward thing, but produces all kinds of outward things. Okay? But it's an inward state of our heart that he says, no, I'm going to take it beyond where other religious rules and regulations and, you know, right and wrong and moral codes go. I want to address the heart. You're to be content with what God has given you. You're to be happy and content in what God has given. And to not be content, again, if somebody else is not wife, I mean, you look at the whole sexual sin issue, man. I mean, the sexual sin issue, there's that wretched, ugly coveting that goes on. Right? Of wanting to be sexual with someone who is not your, you know, I don't care if it's in your mind, if it's in pornography, if it's, it doesn't matter to covet another person, to create lust and insatiable desire for, and then what does that cause you to do? To act out on it in what God would say would be adultery. Okay? Based in covetousness, that I am not content in the state I'm at. I do not trust that my dad knows my desires for a wife or for a husband. God doesn't know how to fulfill me in those ways, and I'm going to covet other women, other men. You know, that is, it infiltrates marriages, you know. I mean, my wife, and this is a process, because unfortunately we grew up in such a tragic, messed up world, right? Where coveting other people's wives is fine. That's one of the things listed, do not covet your neighbor's wife. And you know what? If it's not your wife, you know what it is? It's your neighbor's wife. Whether she's married or not, it's your neighbor's wife. It's not your wife. It's either your wife or your neighbor's wife, someone else's wife, not yours. Okay? And the end result of that is, I mean, I said this once before, and do it. What should be my image of a beautiful, erotic woman? Her. Right? Her. My wife. No one else. No other picture. We have a mess in our culture where we create coveting by putting all these pictures, all these images, all these of this is what a perfect woman is. This is what a woman looks like. And I'm not even talking pornography. That even takes it to another degenerate level. I'm talking just every ad, every commercial, every in front of you thing says, this is what a perfect woman shaped like. This is what she looks like. You know? And that's a tragic thing, right? You know, it's amazing to think, did it really matter how Eve looked? She was the most beautiful woman in the world. Right? Literally. But I mean, she, you know, when Adam saw her, he went, oh my, you know, this is the most wondrous thing I've ever seen in my life. You know, doing this is the epitome of an erotic, sensual, beautiful woman here. And he had no other image in his mind. There was no other image, right? There was no other thing. That is the way God would intend us to be. It's a tragic thing when we get married and we start comparing. Or even not even get married. Even as men start judging women by their body type or their body shapes or their size of their boobs or whatever it might be. You know? I mean, it causes covetousness, and it comes from covetousness, not being satisfied. You know, what should you be satisfied with? The woman God gives you. Is he giving you a woman right now? No? Then shut up. Then be content. Don't be coveting other women. Any other woman, because there's no woman God has given you. And so, God, you're wrong. You might say this is what you want from me, but this is what I want. So I'm going to look at that woman, and I'm going to have thoughts about her that are whatever. Desiring, lustful, coveting. And it creates a wretched culture that we live in. Because we think it's okay to do that. It is the root of other sins. And if we are dealing only with outward actions and the result like we often do, right? Because again, as Paul said, what did he say? You know, I didn't know. And he goes, the law, he goes, I didn't know coveting was real. But as soon as I saw the law that said, do not covet, it awoke in me every kind of coveting. Right? So as I'm sitting here talking to you about thinking about other women or thinking about what car, you know, I really want or my neighbor's ox or whatever it might be that you're thinking about, you know, doing it. I mean, who would know how much coveting is going on here in your hearts? You wouldn't really know. Right? You're all sitting here. Yeah, I don't want to covet doing that. But man, I'd really like to have a new razor. So whatever it might be, you know, it's just a momentary joke or, you know, it doesn't matter. To be discontent and not be thankful is the root of it. And again, it causes a lot of issues. One of the problems that we have, and I just want to, there's a few of you left in here as parents. How do you, because understand, if you hadn't noticed, if you haven't noticed, I need to beat you. But you've noticed that your kids have a tendency towards covetousness, right? You ever notice that? Their siblings playing with the red truck, what do they want? The red truck. I mean, it doesn't matter that they were playing with the blue one that was just fine. They want the red truck if their sibling has a red truck. And so, how do we help our children? How do we teach our children? What do we foster in our children? Most of the time we go, oh, it's all right, honey, I'll find you a red truck. Or you need to share that red truck with him because he's doing it. Or whatever. Wait a minute. So you're acknowledging and rewarding him for coveting. You know? Because if you also hadn't noticed, as soon as you give him the red truck, it wasn't as fun as I thought it was going to be. I'm going to go do something else, right? I mean, that's just the nature of kids. And you parents know what I'm talking about. Okay? Right? It's absolutely true. So what do we do? How do we respond? How do we teach a child? How do we route that out of a kid? Because that's our responsibility, right? To see, what's that? How do we create that foundation, which is critical? Most parents don't. No, it's not by going and buying them a red truck doing it. It's not by satiating what is unsatiable covetousness of the heart. Because understand that it is never satisfied. All of us know that to some degree. We can think, God, if I only had a razor, I would be happy and content, right? And then what happens? I want 4-seat razors. because I want to take my grandkids. It's all good, right? Fulfillment, trying to satiate and fulfill a wicked heart that's covetous is never going to be the end. And to pacify our kids in that and encourage covetousness, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, anybody been in the grocery store lately? You know? Hanging out with kids that are just, I want this, mommy, I want this, I want this, I want this. Oh, honey, it's okay, I'll get you this. You know? Or just quit screaming and rolling on the floor and I'll give it to you. Okay? I mean, it's pretty insane the way that we try to deal with it. We're not helping in any way. All we're doing is encouraging that. And as parents, what would it be that we would want to instill in our children? Contentment. Gratitude. Thankfulness. Right? I mean, that should be seriously come against discontentment. Right? Lack of gratitude. Lack of gratefulness. Okay? I can tell you for absolute fact, there's not kids that come out of this room or are sitting back there who are in desperate want and need. Okay? It's not like they really have this need for some more food or something. I mean, they're all have the basics of life, right? And the truth is, I found absolutely to be the case that one of the most difficult elements to introduce into parenting is money. Right? Because you're going to go buy that red truck. Right? Because this is how we'll take care of it, right? You know? Well, if I just get them both red trucks, then they'll be happy. It's not fair, you know? And understand, playing favorites is never good. Again, I encourage you to read the previous chapters in Genesis. Never goes well, okay? Playing favorites always wrecks people. Usually for life, okay? So playing favorites is never right. But it's also really right to foster in your kids that, yeah, I bought this for them to make them happy. And what should the other kids' response be? I'm really happy for them. It's good for me to see them happy. That means you've trained them right, not, where's mine? How come I didn't get anything? Right? You think that naturally happens? That naturally always happens. Okay? By nature, that is the nature of our selfish hearts. In the process and the purpose of a child, in Romans chapter 1, God says that his wrath was poured out upon mankind because they failed to acknowledge him as God and they failed to be grateful. And they failed to be thankful. It's a big deal. It's not a minor of, oh, thank you. And it's not a matter of, oh, no, I taught my kids to say grace before they eat, to say, thank you, God, for doing this. It's an, you know, while they still are kicking the next to them because I want a quarter to go play with the gumball machine or whatever. You know, it is about cultivating in the heart. And I would contend, because you look at it and say, okay, how do I be content? Well, if I just had that, I'd be content, right? I mean, I can think of some guns that would make me content, right? You know, if I just had that one, I would be happy, you know, right? Whatever it might be, right? Whatever it might be, doesn't matter. Unfortunately, that will never bring contentment, because the issue is lack of thankfulness and lack of gratitude in our hearts. How do we cultivate that? There's a few verses that I think it's important to read relative to this, because I would say one of the core ones would be Paul in Philippians 4:11, and go back and look at this. Paul, he's talking about the church in Philippi, and he's speaking to them, and they recognize and begin to share in his need. And Paul says, he says, not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am in. Now, I know we all who've been around the church have heard that verse, okay? For I have learned to be content. But there's a key word there. What's it say? I have learned. I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances. It isn't that, well, when God finally gives me some of that pixie dust and puts it over me and takes care of all the things in my life and all the needs in my life and makes me happy, I'll be content. You know one thing I can guarantee you? That's not going to happen that way. Okay? The enemy's more about pixie dust. You know, he allures, prospers, gives people what they think they want insatiably. It's an unsatiable deal, coveting wealth. You know, it's always amazing. I mean, I would contend that most of us in this room would go, man, if I could make an extra $100,000 a year, are you kidding me? I wouldn't covet anything, man. I would be the happiest person there was, right? I mean, all of us go, $100,000 more a year? If we had that, I'm all good, man. I could buy the Razor, you know? What? A 6-seater? Yeah, a 10-seater. I don't know what. But we would be so content if we had it. But stop for a moment. Because we have a valley full of people who make that extra $100,000, okay? Who have that extra, you know, they've got $105,000, right? So they're way ahead of us, or whatever it might be, the baseline. You know, they've got the $200,000, whatever it might be. Doesn't matter. Are they happy, or what do they say? If I could only make $500,000 a year, if I could make $500,000 a year, all my problems would be taken care of. I'd be content, I'd be happy, I could spend time with my family, we'd be all happy. Hey, you know the guys are making $500,000 a year, what are they saying? If I could make $1 million, the guys that are making $1 million, I know billionaires, okay? Clients that I've built houses for. Are they happy and content? Does their money bring them joy? No, it doesn't. I've personally known fairly well a couple. I mean, their families are a wreck. They don't have a relationship with their kids. All they want, you know what they want to do? They want to come over to my house and eat venison and hang out with their kids, because that's what they long for. Because they don't have, they can't buy it, and their money can't buy it. In fact, it cost them everything to get there doing it. Money, it's an insatiable thing. It doesn't. Things will never bring that contentment. What brings that contentment? What brings that contentment is being thankful to God. Learning to be thankful to God. How do we do that? Just like in our children, we need to do it in our own hearts, and we cultivate that. When we feel discontent, when we feel like, I want this, or I want that, or I look at this, and what should I There is a positive process, a necessary process, a willing process of submitting to the authority of God. God, what have you given me? I am going to be grateful for what you have given me. And I trust that because you're a loving father who wants the best for his kids. And I go back and forth on the concept of dad spoiling kids. You know, I heard Driscoll say it the other day, you know, that I was listening to Mark and he said, he goes, yeah, I spoil my kids, but they're not allowed to act spoiled. You know? So, truly spoiling your kids? No. Giving them more than they deserve? Absolutely. Does God do that to us? Yeah. It's called grace. You know? Our life, unmerited favor towards us, the ability to sit here and worship the true and living God. Not because we deserve it. Not because we merit it, but because of his undeserving favor towards us. What we do not deserve, he gives us. And that's the best gift of all. Does he give us gifts beyond that? Yeah. You know? Am I more deserving than a child in Bangladesh? Sitting in the slums of Calcutta? I'm not. I'm not more deserving. Is my life better in many ways? I got a toilet to go in and I don't have to spend all day trying to collect enough cow chips to burn to cook a little handful of rice, and life's pretty darn good. I can choose what I want to eat for dinner, you know, doing it. I mean, but are we grateful for that? Do we have hearts that have, you know, the way to be great? Cultivate that. You know, when I wish I had this, or I envy someone else, I covet what somebody else has. I wish I could have that car or that truck or that house or that whatever doing it. I realize that that's a state of our heart that needs to be eradicated. And we need to be in the process of eradicating it. God, help me be grateful for what you've done. God, illuminate and make clear to me what you've given me. You know, when I sit and evaluate the blessing that God has given me with the wife that he has given me, and if I cultivate that in my heart and look at that, are you kidding me? I am thankful. I am happy. You know, when she makes me mad, I forget about that sometimes. I understand. You know, that's not, you know. But what is the right thing to do? You know, covet someone else? I wish I didn't have her for a wife, or I wish I had another wife? No. That is the wife God gave me, and I need to be thankful, continue to be thankful, cultivate gratitude and thankfulness in it, for my house, for my food, for my clothes. Not discontentment. I mean, clothes are a weird one in our culture. Well, I need this shirt, or I need those shoes, or I need this thing, because why? Because the other ones are worn out? No, I just don't like them anymore. Doing it. Is that satiable? I doubt if you'll ever find that perfect pair of shoes that'll last the rest of your life, if that's your heart. Me? I found the perfect pair of jeans about 40 years ago called Wranglers. They're good. No desire to change. Bury me in them, right? Not gloves. You're right. I do. I might covet gloves. Because I haven't found a perfect pair of gloves yet. You know, okay. We are not to be discontent. Does anybody else? There's not a perfect pair of gloves. I mean, you're always looking for. What's that? I don't hunt in these pants, but they're not the perfect pants for the rest of the time when I'm hunting. I have not found the perfect pair of hunting pants yet. I used to dye my worn out ones. You know, this is what I wore. So, Wranglers. Yes, you're right. So, anyway, let me read a couple of other verses, okay? Before I get in trouble. So, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. But godliness actually is a means of great gain. He's talking about people who are preaching and teaching and supposedly preaching the gospel for gain. Okay? He says, but godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into this world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. And if we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang. But flee these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. You know, it's with kids, one of the, again, this, do those of us who lived here very long think this valley as a whole is successful at raising children? One of the worst. Maybe one of the worst there is. I mean, this valley is telling you, think, well, they can give them whatever they need. Yeah, so? That's one of the reasons it's one of the worst. Besides the godlessness, you know, it might be one of the least godly high schools in the nation. I mean, there's not. Highest suicide rate per capita in the country? Kids, yeah. I mean, it's contentment, you know, because they can buy. I mean, you go in the parking lot, you think, man, these are happy kids. Look at the kind of cars their parents bought them, you know. And they didn't even have to have a job, you know. They just had to go to school sometimes on doing it. I mean, money is a disastrous thing. The truth with kids, they need food and shelter. And they're happy and content with real basics. I mean, you watch kids, you know, you can buy them the most expensive toys in the world. What do? You know, they're out in the sandbox playing with sticks or something, you know, doing. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're happy with it. Money, kids don't need that. And yet their hearts are still covetous, right? But what kids do need, to bring that peace and security. And I would contend that this is the key for your children, and this is the key for us individually. They need to be secure in the love of their father and mother. Okay? If a child knows the unmerited, the without having to earn it, love of a father and a mother, if a child knows that, the child's content. The child's happy. I would contend that money is something that keeps that from happening. You know, up here it's bad. Well, I don't have time, so let me buy him this. Tell him I love him. You know, I don't do that, so I'm going to get special edition cable so they can have all the kids shows, okay? That's how I'm going to show them I love them. Or I'm going to send them to soccer camp and football camp and baseball camp and every camp to tell them I love them. And that's not what kids need. Again, those things aren't necessarily wrong. What a kid needs is the absolute love, the unconditional love of a father and mother. And money gets in the way of that. Okay? As a parent, I know. You know, your teenage kid wrecks his car, you know, that he earned and spent all summer working for, or two summers working for, whatever it might be. Oh, it's all right. I'll help you out. I'll buy you a car, right? I'll get you a car because I know you really were. And you're feeling terrible right now. I mean, you're really down and depressed and blue, and I don't want to see you like that, so I'm going to buy you a new car. Is that really what the kid needs? Maybe not. You know? Maybe not. Maybe the kid needed to go back and work at his job some more. You know? And learn the value of a car and learn the value of being responsible with it and, you know, all the things that come out of real life and doing it. Money and as parents, we want to go, okay, you know, kid comes, you know, daughter comes home and goes, hey, what's wrong, honey? All the kids have these puffy coats or whatever it might be, you know? Oh, okay, let me buy you a puffy coat. You know, so you'll be happy. You know, do we do it because they're cold? Do we do it because they need a coat? Or do we, you know, the money is easy rather than teaching the kids, you know, do you have a coat? Yeah. Are you, does it keep you warm? Yeah. So what is, why are you discontent? Why are you ungrateful in doing it? And that's, you know, that's not a, that's not, you know, throw a, what would I say? You know, how do I say this in a way that's not going to, because I really care about getting in trouble. So how, you know, you throw a unloving, you know, plate of food at your kid, you know, and your kid goes, what's this? It's not okay to go, you need to be grateful! Is that going to teach the kid what a kid needs to learn? You know? What was the, was this something that was done with the concern and care and love for this kid? And that's fine to feed your kids lima beans, by the way. Okay? Alright? That, it's fine. In fact, to not do it is to handicap you. That's like having too much money, you don't have to eat. You know? Lentils, same thing. Lentils are on the same level. They're just a, they're just a worse lima bean or something doing it. So, but it is important to your kids when they sit down to eat food to be grateful for the food in front of them. Understand, you know, people eat fried grasshoppers and whatever it might be, locusts and all kinds of weird things that would make us, you know, on doing it. But it's a right here thing. It's an issue here thing. It's not that their taste buds are so terrible. It's a kid thing to let your kid sit there and go, because every time, well, I'm not hungry. I don't really want this. I don't want to eat this. I have to eat this. You know, no. Well, we have ice cream afterwards. Well, you're up for ice cream, right? I mean, you're coveting something other than what is put in front of you and you're ungrateful in doing that. It is really important to cultivate that. I'm not saying abuse your kids by feeding them lentils every night, okay? But I am saying that, and I'm kidding, you know, but I am saying that it is important for your kids and you to set the example. One of the problems is you're stinking spoiled parents, you know? Well, I don't like it, so I'm not going to cook it, and I'm going to want my kid to do it. So then I don't have to go through the hassle of them not eating it or not learning to eat it, on doing it. It's really important to cultivate in your kid gratitude, gratefulness, and contentment with what they have, right? I mean, you know, almost the entirety, 98% of the world, you set a plate of food in front of them, if it was edible, what would they be? Thankful. Hugely thankful. A big plate of food? They've probably never even seen that in their life. And we're talking the majority of the world. They'd be just tears in their eyes, grateful. Set in front of your kid, you go, oh, I don't like that. What are we doing? What are we doing with, and so what do we do? So, well, I want what I want, not what Dad wants for me. We teach that to our kids. And it's wrong. We need to teach our kids that what Dad wants for me is because Dad, and this is the model we're to set as parents. If Dad wants this for me, Dad wants the best for me. And I can trust Dad wanting the best for me. And I can trust that Dad's going to do what's best for me. And I can trust that if Dad puts his food in front of me, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to, you know, it's not going to poison me. You know, I'm not going to get sick. It's because Dad loves me. And for whatever reason, he wants me to eat this, whatever it is, thing in front of me here, right? And you learn to trust their dad. I'll be okay. This will be good. This is the process. I can be thankful for a dad that loves me and cares about me and has a purpose. He isn't being inconsiderate, doesn't regard me, doesn't love me. That's not my dad. You know what that does when you grow up and a kid reaches a point of accountability? I can trust my dad. I can trust my dad has what's best for me in life. The state that I'm in right now, I can trust my dad knows. And I can trust God, my Father, is very well aware of my state and knows my state and is concerned about my state. And loves me more than I can ever imagine. And only wants what's best for me. I can be happy about that. I can be content in the state that I'm in because I trust a loving Father. We need to teach that to our kids. We need to instill that in our kids. That you can trust a Father even if it's put lima beans in front of you But he loves me. And I'm okay with that. And I need to act gratefully. Not, ooh, yeah, gag, right? We can teach our children those things. To be grateful. So, let me read one more. Because there is, being content with little is, being content, period, little or much, is a very important thing. Hebrews 13:5, it says, let your way of life be free from the love of money, being content with what you have, for he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not be afraid. What shall man do to me? Having that trust of a father is the key, is the key to contentment. That I trust him. You know, I've always said, and I believe this is true, to the degree that parents fail their kids, they teach their kids survival skills. Okay? Now, teaching your kid how to light a fire is a good thing, okay? But, by survival skills, a child is learning, well, nobody else is going to take care of me, I need to do it. Nobody else is going to meet my needs, so I need to do that. Nobody else is going to be there for me emotionally, so I need to take care of my emotional needs. Nobody else is, I need to, that is an absolute wrong skill for a kid to ever learn. Okay? A kid should trust their dad. I'm not saying he should trust me. I don't have to worry about food and shelter and clothing. He tries to teach us those things in Jesus' teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, right? He says, don't worry about your food and your shelter and clothing. Look at the flowers. Look at the birds of the air. He goes, if I care about them that much, how much do I care about you? You tell a kid that who didn't have a father and mother he could trust, doesn't mean anything to him. I can't trust you. I got to trust myself, man. Who else am I going to trust, right? I mean, I'm the only one that's really trustable in this situation. Teaching a kid that they can love, that they can trust their father, that they don't have to worry about food and shelter and clothing. That doesn't mean they're spoiled. Doesn't mean that don't go without sometimes. You know? You can always find something to put around them so they're not naked, you know? In our culture, you can always find them something to eat, right? We can always get a tarp over their head. We're not really struggling for those things that he can trust a father. My dad will take care of me. You teach a child that comes against a covetous heart. Okay? That teaches, I can trust. I can believe and depend on my dad. He's going to take care of me. So I can be content in what God has given me, in the state that I'm in, where God has led me and what God has provided for me. Okay? With my wife. Right? I mean, it's a problem. Discontentment in marriage, there's a couple things there. It almost is inevitable, but it's almost universal. What do you do with it? Do you trust that God has brought the spouse into my life that is my wife, one wife for life? I'm to sleep with her the rest of my life, so better enjoy it. It's not hard to do most of the time. But so how do we deal with a covetous heart? Because we need to eradicate that from our heart, just like we need to eradicate a murderous heart, which is anger and losing control of our temper and doing it. Just like an adulterous heart. Heart of thievery, an idolatrous heart. Those things are issues of the heart, not just outward actions that need to be eradicated from our lives. And we can learn to do that if we're willing to realize the wrongness of it. You know? I mean, Amazon, what a terrible thing. You know, you've got this little computer. Anything I want. Well, Amazon has it. You know what? I just gotta push the click button. I'm here. Oh man, I'm happy now. Right? I mean, it creates in you this insatiable thing. The way it's, and they'll even deliver it right to your door. And food. I don't even have to leave my house again. Boop, 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 boop. Everything just comes to me and I'm all happy. Completely discontent. Right? Completely unhappy living a covetous life. We can cultivate in ourselves by looking to God, by trusting God, If he's our Father, that he cares about us, that he loves us, that he knows the state of our being, he knows the state of our life, and we can trust him to lead us in the right way in what is best for us. So, covetousness. I would, anything that we say, I want this, even though God doesn't want this. Lack of contentment in the state of our souls is produced by covetousness. And we can be, if that is the state of our souls, God is the cure. So, let's pray. God, I thank you that you put Jesus on that cross for my covetousness. I thank you that not only did you put him there so that I could be forgiven, not only that I could walk with you outside of guilt and shame and condemnation, but that I could be set free from covetousness, that I could be set free from the bondage of sin, that I could be set free from the bondage of my flesh. Jesus, I thank you that what you did on the cross, if we can identify, be completely immersed into your death, and by that, be also immersed into the resurrection and the power of the resurrection. And that power of the resurrection is to redeem our souls in real-time life, to redeem our minds, to renew our hearts. And that's what we need. We need our hearts redeemed. What the enemy has purposely worked in, his schemes and deceptions, in creating and forming the wrong passions and wrong desires. You call us to be passionate and to long and desire. You even tell us to lust after you. To have an insatiable desire for a relationship with you. But not anything else. And I thank you for creating us as passionate people that long and that want more. That long to prosper, that long to create, that long to expand and grow. And I thank you that you've given us the perfect environment to do that, and that is in our relationship with you. Because that's the only thing that matters, and that's what's eternal. That is our eternal investment, is our relationship with you, in growing and expanding and being passionate about and driven by. That's where fulfillment comes. Most of us don't know that because we've never really sold out. We've wanted to add you to our lives, and God, I ask that you would show us that, please, the areas in our life where that is true and that it doesn't work, we know it doesn't work because there's a lack of contentment in our lives that we try to fulfill with the things of this world, and the enemy is right there, ready to throw things at us. I ask that you would show us those things that are not fulfilled. Not in some, isn't that a cute spiritual statement, but that are not fulfilled by you. That are not fulfilled in our contentment, in our relationship with you. And the things you give us, and the money you give us, and the resources. You have us in this valley in order to benefit others, and to love others. You have us a country that is prosperous, that a country that is wealthy beyond the imagination. We are all kings in most of the world. And we live as kings, and that isn't for our own hedonism. That isn't for our own laziness. It isn't for our own happiness. It is to love other people, to give us a greater resource, to care about others. So I ask that you would cause us to recognize those things in our life where we are driven by covetousness. To make them expose and to cause us to learn to be content. To desire to learn to be content. So I thank you, Jesus, for making that way. I thank you that you're a perfect, loving Father, that if we would just trust you, if we would just grab your hand and say, let's go, life would be good. And I thank you that I can be absolutely confident of that, and I can scream it, and I can yell it, and I can teach it, and I can live by it, because I know it's true. I thank you for that. Amen.